Hello, everyone. This is Wes Miller with Pigskins and Pageantry, a podcast dedicated to all things SEC football and proud member of Blue Wire Hustle. Join me, Jesse, and Matt each week as we discuss last week's games, news around the league, predictions for next week's matchups, and more. And what's up, everybody? It's Wes. Our last week of games is in the books, and we had a couple of the top teams solidifying their spots. Some of the other teams having some crazy games, as has been the case for a lot of them this year, it seems. I don't know what's going on. It seems like it's more than usual, but there's a lot of crazy ones. But here to discuss it with me, as always, Jesse, what's going on?
I agree. I think it's been a weird week. I don't know if it's like we mentioned before, where it's COVID hangover, but that doesn't really even apply this week because we're in conference. For the most part. And so I'm not sure what's happening. I had a lot of conversations this week where it's just mixed up in college football and nobody knows what's happening in the college football world. Right. You've got weird games and then you've got Urban Meyer hitting on co-eds at bars. Who knows?
I don't even know if we'll have time to talk about that because there's just so much going on, but you're right.
It's so gross. It is.
And apparently there's more videos and it's worse than we thought and whatever.
This is exactly why he left Florida. It was not for a heart thing. It's because he was being nasty with cheerleaders and all other manner of co-eds. And so his heart just gave out somehow at the same time. But
we had this conversation at my daughter's soccer practice last night with some other parents. Are like, look, I'm not saying that there are no health issues going on, but it's conveniently like something comes up and it's always, oh, my heart. I've got this, condition and he's gone. And it's convenient.
He might be gone out of Jacksonville soon.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot in there. So, but we're going to talk about SEC games.
Yeah.
Even though there's a lot to that. And I'm sure there'll be more to come on that. But
absolutely.
Let's go ahead and talk about those games from last week.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
All right. The first game we'll talk about was Arkansas at Georgia. This game highly anticipated, thought that this was just going to be a good old-fashioned slugfest between two teams that take a lot of pride in running the ball. Obviously Sam Pittman coming from that background of, controlling the line of scrimmage and Georgia's Matt Luke taking great pride in that too. But Georgia, the victor in this one, big time, 37-0. I got the point in this one. So story in this one, JT Daniels, still struggling a bit with that lat injury. So Stetson Bennett gets the start here. So, a big thing that Kirby was trying to encourage everyone, because noon kickoff, potential to be kind of that sleepy noon feel on a Saturday afternoon and kind of a slow start, fans trickling in the first and second quarters. But Kirby was like, you guys need to be here. And they showed up and they really affected the game from the start. Arkansas, I think it was the first two plays were false starts, I believe. And before you know it, it's first and 20 to start their offensive drives. So obviously the fans showed up, influenced the game early with those penalties. And then battle at the line of scrimmage, as I alluded to earlier, really set the tone of this game. Georgia controlling both sides and just kind of, pushing the line however they wanted. So obviously this is a big win. I was not expecting that. I was expecting Georgia, the way we matched up, to be able to win if things worked as they should. But I didn't see 37-0, as I don't think anybody did really. But in Georgia's two games against top 10 opponents this year, the defense has given up 3 points and given up a total of 16 points after five games. So, and in the last two games, the combined score has been 99-0. So obviously one of those is Vandy. Again, these are stats. Right. They sound cool. And I'm trying to take stuff in perspective. It is nice to celebrate, victories, though. And I mentioned the rushing attack before. We had, you know, James Cook with 87 yards, Zamir White, 68, Kenny McIntosh, 57, Kendall Milton with 48. I mean, it's just a good, you know, steady diet of running backs spreading the ball around. Yeah. And they were each able to do some good things. So, Jesse, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it, you know, first off, just starting with the fans. That's huge. People actually listening and coming in early for a noon kickoff, which is unheard of. And as we continue to go through these games in different stadiums, I think we'll start to see how fans really do play a huge part in their team success, and something that we weren't able to see last year. And I think that everybody is now having to come to terms with that. You know, these freshman guys from last year are having to go into stadiums that were empty and are now filled with, you know, dozens and dozens of fans that are really impacting a game. And it does make a difference. So that was a big thing. And then unfortunately, the Razorbacks just did not match up to a top 10 standard that, you know, Georgia set and that we were hoping they were at now. I know we joked earlier in the season when we were previewing everything, we looked at Georgia's schedule and we said, you know, it was the fall bake sale because it was a lot of easy teams. And then we got here last week and we were like, well, maybe we're really going to see what's going on. Arkansas did not live up to the hype. I mean, not to take anything away from Georgia, but it's like Arkansas finally got the stage to show themselves, and they did. You know, they did hurt themselves. There was 13 penalties for 100 yards, including two false starts before they could even run a play. Like you mentioned, Georgia's defense put great pressure. The crowd noise was huge. And, you know, Georgia showed really good depth. Like you mentioned, they were forced to play without their starting quarterback. They showed great depth. I thought Bennett managed the game pretty well. He completed some passes early. They were leaning really heavily on that depth of running backs that they have. And obviously we knew Georgia's defense was going to look good, and they did. Overall, I don't think Arkansas lived up to the hype. Unfortunately, it was too good of a Cinderella story. And I think they still have some shoes to try on before they find that perfect fit and they truly get to go to the ball. Georgia's defense obviously is the best in the country. There's no doubt about that, but I think my maybe not so hot take, I don't really know what people think about it. I just don't think JT Daniels is ever going to make it in the NFL. And maybe I'll eat my words later, but this guy seems really prone to injury. He has not been able to stay in games and everything. I don't think he's the guy. Not saying that Stetson Bennett is the guy either.
Right.
I don't think JT Daniels is the guy.
Yeah, it's an odd injury, and definitely I agree with you. If he kind of stays hurt, as he's kind of struggled with injury, seems like throughout his collegiate career. I was listening to Kirk Herbstreit talk about this particular injury, and he said Dak Prescott had the same thing. Although I think Dak's injury was worse, but the cure for him was to just commit to taking 2 or 3 weeks off. I can't remember how many actually. And just, you know, not try to play through it and not continually re-injure it. So I don't know if that's something that Georgia's going to have to commit to and say, look, we're just going to have you sit out for 2-3 games, however many it takes. I mean, they were certainly careful with him last year before bringing him in. Yeah. So I would imagine that they would try the same thing this year, especially if we're able to run the ball the way that we have. I expected Arkansas's defense to be able to, you know, at least contain Georgia. I did not expect the kind of offensive line performance that we saw. So we'll see how that translates to other games. Another surprise was the next game that we're going to talk about, and that was Tennessee at Mizzou. Wow. Tennessee winning this one 62-24.
Do Tennessee fans even remember the last time Tennessee was able to put up 62 points?
My gosh, just like the blowout blew my mind as well. It's like, I don't know when, like you said, I don't know when's the last time we've seen this. I neglected to mention at the top of the show that Matt's not here with us. Obviously he's not feeling well. So we wish him well, a speedy recovery to feel better. But I wish that he had been here so we could kind of celebrate with him a little bit. 'Cause this, you know, we don't see this too much. So, I honestly also forgot to mention here that Matt got the point. You guys tied, but the way the differential worked out, as you can see on there, he got the point. But I think that was his only point of the week, by the way.
I'll let him have Tennessee. That's
you know,
fine.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. In the spirit of it. Yeah, I hear you. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm just like blown away. I don't even know where to begin. And I think we talked about, like, is Tennessee this improved or is Mizzou just this bad?
And Tennessee has some bright spots, but I don't think Tennessee is like 2 points good. I think Mizzou's that bad.
Right. Yeah. I think that potential is definitely there. Although it could be a little bit of both, but obviously, you know, as we said, a big surprise to everybody. I want to get head coach Josh Heupel's thoughts on this game as well.
Coach, you said the staff was confident in Hendon Hooker's return, but what impressed you about his performance?
I thought he did a great job of managing everything, was a great decision maker for us, did some things in the past game, thought created some huge plays. I thought our outside receivers played really well today. And then his feet in the run game were an added bonus for us, helped us play 11-on-11.
Well, you mentioned the run game. Tyon Evans had a big game. What do you attribute his success to running?
You know, Tyon's a guy that had some really positive things happen early, wasn't able to practice for a week or two, just starting to get his feet back on the ground. He's got a great ceiling in front of him. Today was a showcase of who he is as a player.
And what aspects of this big win do you want to see your team build on moving forward?
There's some things in the second half that we got to do better, finishing in the goal line situation, kickoff cover. I want us to see us continue to grow week by week. These guys have been phenomenal. Obviously, it hasn't been perfect, but they continue to really push through the process of growing as a football family. Love working with these guys every day, man. Our best is still ahead of us. Enjoy this one today and come back in the building on Monday and let's go get better.
Coach, thank you.
Appreciate it.
So definitely some signs of growth as he hinted at there. Jesse, what are your thoughts about this game?
He sounds like he has a retainer in his mouth all the time. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
I haven't really heard him talk that much until now.
I haven't either. It just sounds like retainers in his mouth, which is fine. But first of all, Hooker, I'm sorry. It's just funny. I'm going to laugh about it because I'm clearly a second grade boy. I don't know. But for those that don't remember, he's a graduate transfer from Virginia Tech. He lost the preseason quarterback battle to Joe Milton. But he took over as the starter in game 3 and has kind of emerged as a solid player. You know, he was able to help guide them to scoring on their first 9 drives and delivered touchdown passes of 35 yards to Javonte Payton, 35 yards to Velus Jones, and 24 to Cedric Tillman. So it's, you know, some positive things definitely on Tennessee's side to kind of push them in the right direction. Things have been pretty abysmal there. Mm-hmm. And so some good looks for them, but it really has been sort of a disastrous start for the first year defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks. He's a former NFL head coach, and Missouri's defensive line and linebackers just couldn't get off blocks. They were not doing hot. Allowing Tennessee's running backs to get into the secondary with ease. And that just can't happen at all, especially if you're going to play in the SEC. You've got to be strong on that line. Your linebackers have to work. But, you know, when Coach Drinke was asked if he was considering making a change at defense, he said, "I just stepped off the football field. I haven't considered anything like that." So I know we'll get to talking about this maybe a little bit later, but you know, it's not always just head coaches that are in the hot seat. I think coordinators feel that as well. And it seems like at Mizzou, things have gone downhill rather quickly. Not just saying that it's this particular coordinator's fault, but it's definitely something that needs to be looked at.
Right. And sometimes somebody's got to be the fall guy, right? So
absolutely.
But there's a bit of news from that we'll talk about a little bit later, but, next, we had Ole Miss at Alabama, and this one that I was grossly wrong about.
Me too!
Right. Bama taking this one 42-21, and truthfully, it wasn't that close. I think the last two were kind of tacked on late for Ole Miss. Jesse getting the point in this one. And to me, the saddest part about this is that Matt will not be purchasing an Ole Miss shirt to wear because I was really looking forward to that. But yeah, I was definitely wrong about this. That said, Kiffin, man, and I text you guys this during the game. Like he, I get what he's trying to do to a certain extent. He's trying to make a statement on these fourth downs, going for it, keeping Bama on their heels, whatever. Yep. But he just absolutely coached his team out of any chance. I think Bama was already the better team, obviously.
His hubris gets the better of him a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I think Saban knew that.
Yeah. And like I said, like I even texted you guys, I'm like, I'm pretty sure, or maybe I put it, I can't remember where I put it, but I'm pretty sure Bama like prepped for this stuff. They know his antics. And, absolutely. And I'm sure in practice this week, they did all kinds of stuff. I know Paul Feinbaum said that if he was a betting man after he talked to Saban on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, he would have bet on Bama because he said that he was very confident, and he said that they had a great week of practice. And coaches never say that. They're always trying to.
No, Saban never says that.
Right. They're trying to downplay it, say, oh, man, we got so much to work on. We're struggling, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, he was confident going into the game. And so they were ready. I don't think last year they were necessarily ready. Perhaps they went into it thinking that they could just kind of take it no problem. But obviously this time it was different.
I think last year we just tried to get too fancy with our defensive schemes. We just tried to do too much. And if you look at what we did this past weekend, it was simple.
Yeah.
It was simple and effective. And I think that was the key going into it. And you mentioned fourth downs, you know, specifically about Kiffin, but he obviously didn't help his case. He had three failed fourth down calls in the first half.
And some of them on his side of the field, right? One or two of them was on his side of the field. That blows my mind. I just don't understand.
And Saban, I think, kind of flipped it. He, you know, two touchdowns on fourth down play. And he prepared his defensive players for Kiffin's fourth down attempts. We've seen them be so successful in converting on fourth down in their previous games that I think Nick Saban knew not only have they been successful doing that, but he was going to try really hard against Nick Saban, the antics are going to be there. And so Saban said, you know, he told his defensive players, he said, you've got to have the mindset that you're going to play two third downs.
Right.
And I think that's the key. It's just always to expect that you're going to do that. And Alabama's defense was burned by Ole Miss last year. You know, for 48 points and 647 yards a year ago. That's insane. We made big fourth down stops and plenty of other stops, you know, on third. But we limited Ole Miss to 291 total yards. We did give up a pair of fourth quarter touchdowns. I will say one of them is stupid. That was a BS PI call. It was an uncatchable ball. I do not agree with it. I think that was stupid. And that's what put them in the red zone to have a touchdown. I think that was dumb, and I'm not happy about it, but I digress. But yeah, they just for context, the Rebels came in leading the nation with 635 yards and 53 points per game, but they could not do it in Bryant-Denny. No one really mentioned it, you know, as if when you're reading any of the articles or anything, but I think the crowd played a big part too. I really do. It was, you know, the 3:30 game slot, but it was a packed house in Bryant-Denny. It's so loud there. You know, it's such a wonderful place to play. And like I said, you go from no fans to over 101,000 fans. It's insane, especially 101,000 that desperately want you to lose. That's huge. And then get your popcorn ready.
I was waiting for it.
Not only did the defense make big stops, but the offense was just delivering, especially to Brian Robinson Jr. Robinson rushed for a career high of 171 yards and four touchdowns. And I mean, really just finally got the run game going. We hadn't really been utilizing it that much, in my opinion. We'd really been relying on passing game, and we just started grounding and pounding, and it was fantastic. We used it really effectively and strategically, I think, too, to waste clock time so that we had less time with the ball in Matt Corral's hands. I think that was so brilliant. Mm-hmm. Everything Saban does, and obviously I'm going to sing his praises, but anyone can look at it. He does everything very intentionally, you know, with prepping them for fourth down.
Even breakfast.
And also, yeah, eating breakfast. It starts with a Coke and two little Debbies. Everybody knows this. But overall, I thought it was such a great game. I was very excited about it. I was not expecting it to be that much of a blowout. And I know it's not a blowout, but that much of
It really was, though, like you said, until the end. I mean, it was was not even close. And like you said, keeping the ball away from them, key. Matt Corral, mm-hmm. who many people have called the best quarterback in the country, only throwing for 213 yards. Their offense only getting 291 yards on the day mm-hmm. compared to the ridiculousness of last year. Obviously, they had a better game plan coming in this one. So
absolutely. And I think, too, you know, not just stopping them from converting on fourth down, but the defense really applied a lot of pressure to Matt Corral that he hasn't seen this season. And he did not have as much time as he's used to having. He couldn't get the reads that he's used to getting. It was, I think, a totally different game this year right. than last year. Same outcome, just completely different.
I was expecting the number one and number two teams in the country to really be tested on Saturday. And ultimately they weren't. Or you could flip that around and just say the top two teams really, like I said at the beginning, you know, solidified their spot. They basically were flexing on Saturday and saying we're the best two. So, you know, we'll see as things go along. Obviously, a lot of things can happen. We still, I mean, we're a good bit into the season, but there's a good bit left. So lots can happen. So we'll see how things go. And next we had Troy at South Carolina. This one. Kind of wild.
Weird.
South Carolina winning this one 23-14. I got the point in this one, but my gosh, you know, lots of miscues on South Carolina's part. They've got so much growing to do. And, you know, I'm not necessarily knocking them because I know that they do have a lot to work on. They've had a lot to work on, and we knew that coming into the season. We knew that they were going to be a work in progress, so not necessarily a – you know, surprise there, but they even had the infamous toss the ball before you score moment.
I don't understand why that's still a thing.
Bounce through the end zone, and even despite that, they did manage to hold on. However, look, I know that we do an SEC podcast, and I, you know, obviously I'm an SEC fan, but I do kind of think Troy kind of got screwed in this one. I don't know if you saw that with the fumble recovery late in the game.
Yeah.
One of those deals where the ball just sort of disappeared at the bottom of the pile. And actually, when they came up with it, I think a Troy guy did have the ball. However, they ruled it to South Carolina. And at that point, it's been ruled. How are you going to overturn it? Because you got nothing to see at the bottom of that pile at that point. So, but hey, they got it done. Sometimes it's not pretty, but it's a win. So
it has not been pretty.
What are your thoughts on this one?
It was funny. You know, we were out. I live in South Carolina, for those that don't know. I do now. And not far from Columbia, just about 2 hours. And, you know, I'm out at like a restaurant bar. Bama's, you know, playing at the same time. And man, South Carolina fans were quite unwell for a bit. They are not a hopeful bunch at all. But they were a little unwell. So the Gamecocks have scored one rushing touchdown in 5 games.
Mm.
Ooh.
That's rough.
But it's tough. There's a lot to work on there. But again, you know, Troy is not anything to kind of scoff at. They've been good in their conference. They're not a bad team. They've tripped up SEC teams in the past. Look at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And they are $1.4 million richer from a guaranteed contract agreeing to the game. A game that they think they should have won. And honestly, they could have. The mistakes that, you know, were giving them the advantage, they were there, but they couldn't make them count. So the Gamecocks got the win, and the knowledge that they are more lucky than good, I think, And yeah, for a team that's really not expected to do much, they haven't really done much. But there's some progress being shown, I think. And their defense is there. But yeah, the offense is
It's just kind of there.
They come to the games. The offense shows up.
You know,
it doesn't show out. It shows up.
Like you were talking about, that has to be a great feeling if you're Troy, because you show up. First of all, you know you're going to get paid big time no matter what. But then when you show up against some of these SEC teams that are kind of struggling a bit, maybe rebuilding, whatever you want to call it, but also you have a legit shot at winning this too. So it's got to be a great – it's a win-win, right? It's like if I lose, big deal. We got paid –
$1.4 million.
Great for our program. Imagine what we can do to our facilities with that, blah, blah, blah. And
even recruiting at their level.
Yeah.
Look, we put up – you know, we almost beat out a Division I, you know, SEC school.
Exactly.
Great.
It's nothing but a help to you for sure. So win-win. But, I love that for a team that wasn't expected to do much, they haven't done much. So,
sorry, South Carolina.
But hey, you know, like you said, or like we said, it's sometimes it's not pretty, but a win's a win, I guess. And
it's the W.
They're not the worst team in the SEC, I don't think. So
they're not.
Anyway,
which is saying a lot.
All right, let's talk about another surprise of the evening, and that was Florida at Kentucky. You talk about being baffled. So obviously I was baffled by Tennessee at Mizzou, but then I kept watching this game, and like probably a lot of Florida fans, I was watching this game thinking, you know, Florida's going to get it together eventually, right? I mean, they're going to turn it around. They're going to get it, right?
Not so fast, my friend.
And it just kept going on, and it kept going on. And I think I was texting you guys. I was like, guys, have you flipped it over to this? And like, this might happen.
I think you know this. My brother was in town. We had gone to dinner. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting. We got bar seats at dinner because they were really busy. And I start looking at, we had been watching the game up until then, and we just both, like, he had the LSU Auburn game on his phone. I had the Kentucky game on mine, and they're just sitting there on the bar. And this is like it's not a pub, like it's not a sports bar that we're
right,
in.
Right.
We're
right,
just
right.
like,
you like, made it a sports
bar. You can't stop watching. We made it a sports bar. You can, because they had no TVs there. We're just like, what do we do? Right. Wow.
Yeah. I just, yeah, I'm there with you.
Check on your Florida fan friends. Very hard to say. Check on them. They're not okay.
Oh man. So, one of the dads on, one of the soccer dads, his daughter's on the team with mine. He's a Florida fan, big time Florida fan. And Willie, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, but on Monday, yesterday, he was just sitting there. And we were talking about football, and we would kind of talk about that a little bit, and then we'd divert away. But then he would just snap back into, like, I can't believe we lost to Kentucky. But yeah, like I said, an unbelievable game. Kentucky winning this one 20-13. Nobody got the point because obviously none of us
picked
Kentucky. It's Kentucky's first win against Florida in Lexington since 1986. So pull out the history books, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
Florida miscues. We talked about South Carolina's miscues, but Florida miscues. Lots of false starts, 8 in total, including one on 4th and 1 near the end, forcing them to settle for a field goal.
Yep. Oh, it was so bad.
And the field goal blocked, returned for a touchdown. It was another one, the interception that resulted in an eventual touchdown. But hey, I mean, obviously let's give credit to Kentucky, right? I mean, you know, Florida had their struggles, but it's up to Kentucky to cash in, you know, nobody's scoring points for them. So, the defense for Kentucky played great. Offense did what they needed. So, Kentucky is now 5-0 with LSU rolling
into town. That's insane.
You think, so I didn't go around to verify this was correct, but I heard that up in Lexington, they were going crazy, like burning cars and stuff. I hope they saved a few.
They were.
Okay. I didn't research that, but I heard that was going on.
No, that's why I put, obviously no one else can see the notes, but I put someone check on Lexington to make sure it's still standing.
Still standing.
Because immediately after, and I, I don't know where my brother found these videos. I don't know, on Instagram or wherever. I don't know the accounts he follows. But he just started showing me. I don't know what, I haven't been to UK's campus. I don't know if they have, I'm assuming they have like their own Greek row, but it could have been on Greek row. It could have been in a neighborhood. I have no idea. I think it might've been in downtown, but they just made a bonfire.
It's just like, in the
it was
middle
just
of the
there. And then there was like thousands of people gathered around it. They're losing their minds. And then the, I mean, obviously the cops have to come. They have to try to do crowd control and get this fire out. And yeah, it Lexington got unhinged after this. You talk about a crowd really getting behind a team too. Kroger Field was not an easy place to play on Saturday.
Right.
Especially as they started to get momentum, you know, kind of going. But yeah, it was, I was worried for Lexington. Their home crowd was 61,632. And it really, it did the same thing, I think, that UGA's did to Arkansas. They were able to kind of disrupt the Gators' cadence, and it contributed to a lot of the false starts, I think, just like for Arkansas. The Florida players chalked it up to a lack of focus and blah, 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 blah. But Coach Stoops said, you know, he was really happy with the edge that and the noise that the crowd gave them, and he really thought it was an advantage for them. But I think a couple takeaways is both teams struggled on third down. Kentucky entered the game converting 54% of its chances, but made just 1 of 8 against Florida. And then the Gators were just 4 of 13 after entering with a 50% conversion rate. So that's not great. You have to convert on third down. And the takeaway, you know, UF might not be up to snuff. I'm just saying it. I know we barely beat them. I get it. Don't come for me. I get it. What I'm saying is, we look at what's been happening. They might not be up to snuff. And Kentucky still has to watch their penalties. We talked about Florida getting a lot of penalties. Kentucky had a lot of penalties. And they've had that in previous games too. They've also struggled with holding on to the ball and turnovers. But they've really got to watch penalties because they could have lost this one very easily with penalties. And the East could come down to Kentucky and UGA.
Yeah, Kentucky. Very well so. I mean, absolutely. And I like he's they're going crazy up there. But like I said, I hope they saved a few cars to burn because they got LSU rolling in next week. And I think they could absolutely win that game too. You look at LSU and their struggles.
I definitely think they could.
Man, you thought that they were rocking after this win. Imagine when they beat LSU. I'm sure that'll be another, I don't know what the history books
You'll
are looking like there,
FEMA.
But
you'll have to send someone in.
Something like that. So I don't know if you heard.
Good for you, Pat. Good for you.
I don't know if you heard, but Dan Mullen, after the game, they were talking to him about the game. He's like, well, yeah, but you know, we had 382 yards to their 224. Like, he was dismissing the fact like they didn't play well. He's like, well, we actually did play well. It's just not on the scoreboard, I guess. But that's the only stat that unfortunately that people care about is the score. So, and
yeah, I mean, sure, you played well, but
it was just weird. His dismissiveness of that. So
it's Dan Mullen, it's Dan Mullen. I texted one of my best friends who's a UF grad, and I was like, what's happening? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it. He was like, but they stormed the field. He's like, Florida and Bama don't do that. And I was like, you're right. We don't, because we've been there before.
I was going to say,
like, we've been there before. It's not a thing that we do. But, and I don't think, again, congratulations to Kentucky. Amazing. Do not burn your city to the ground. And don't rush the field. It's tacky. And it makes it seem like, we're so bad. We did something right. Finally, just own it with class and be a winner. Be a winner.
I hear you, but when you haven't beat them in your own place since '86, I mean,
I can't get behind it. I can't get behind the field rush. It's dangerous. It's not a good idea. And it's trash.
It is.
Now they did better than Ole Miss and they did not take the goalpost. So Ole Miss is still completely.
I know you're just hurting your own, you know, athletic expenses there. You got to replace them
at that point. You really are. And like, I don't know about Kroger Field. I don't know if it's turf or not, but if it is, or
it
even
is,
if it's grass, don't mess with that. Get off. It's expensive.
Yeah. So we talked about Dan Mullen's post game press conference, or not press conference, but just on the field interview. Let's hear what Mark Stoops had to say. And you have to listen kind of closely because, as you said, it was a madhouse on the field. So,
Coach, how did your defense get this done tonight?
That's pretty special. To get what was that, eight stops basically there at the end. Really incredible. Shows a lot of toughness and resiliency. Great win.
It's been since 1986 since you've beaten Florida on this field. Where does this win rank in your tenure here?
It's another win. I tell our players all the time, if we want to play in big games, take care of what's right in front of us. And that's practice. It's this next game. I'm happy for a fan base. We've been tormented. We've had some really close games with the Gators for a long time. It's good to win one at home for them.
This fan base certainly helped you today with how loud it was. What does a win mean for this program?
There's no doubt they helped. Now, see, this is what I'm talking about. We need Kroger Field like this every week. They affected the game. We need all the help we can get. It's a great for our fan base. It's great for our kids. We're happy. We'll celebrate tonight, and we got to go back to work.
We're giving some hugs there right before the clock hits zero. For you, what does this win mean?
Just the next thing that's in front of me. I really do. It's again, I'm happy for our fan base. It's been a long time. We've worked hard for a lot of years. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to celebrate tonight. I'm going to go back to work tomorrow morning.
Isn't that just, Mark Stoops, just to not like he's downplaying it, but at the same time, he's not going to get too insane about it. He's like, yeah,
no,
it's a great
it.
Win. We're going to celebrate a little bit tonight and then get right back to work tomorrow. So,
it's out of the Saban playbook. I like it. And yeah. You could hear in the background, I don't know if it was the state troopers or whoever it was, but you could hear them saying, get back.
Yeah.
sure people were swarming to try to get to the coach, and you can't do that.
Right. I heard another podcast talking about Mark Stoops and just his ethic and or work ethic and stuff like that. And they were saying, I bet that he packs his own lunch every day to bring as well. He's just that kind of guy. He's just a simple guy, whatever. So, all right, let's go ahead and talk about Mississippi State at Texas A&M. And what a crazy one this one was. In Kyle Field, Mississippi State takes down number 15, Texas A&M, 26-22. Again, nobody got the point because nobody picked him because, I mean, why would we? Right. This is probably the most complete game that the air raid offense has had at Mississippi State. You look at Will Rogers' numbers. He threw the ball 59 times, which is not unusual. They've thrown it quite a bit. I think he leads pass attempts by like a ridiculous number this year.
and
completed 46 of them, 408 yards and 3 touchdowns. A&M on the flip side kind of struggled to get a good offensive rhythm despite Isaiah Spiller's 100 yard effort on 16 carries. You do have to credit Mississippi State's defense for doing what they needed to do, holding A&M to 297 yards total. Gene Chizik, in his commentary on SEC Network, said that the offense for Mississippi State has answers for everything. Like, if a particular situation presents itself, like they have a thing, they have something for everything. But it's just been a matter of execution so far. And obviously this game, they were able to do that really well. So obviously Mike Leach is very happy with this effort, and let's hear what he's got to say, and then I want to hear your thoughts,
Jesse.
Let's
do it.
Coach Leach, your team's been through a lot of weird things this season. What does the resiliency that they showed tonight tell you about your program and this team?
Well, we were resilient in all those other games, too, I mean, the ball bounced funny for us, and the ball had some help bouncing funny sometimes. But, we were resilient in all of them, and I have to say I'm proud of our team for that.
I don't know what textbook air raid actually looks like, but I have to feel that Will Rogers was pretty close to that tonight.
Getting closer. We're getting closer.
What was the adjustment that your defense made after the first few series in the first half? Zone scheme was working a little bit. You talked about an adjustment at halftime when I spoke to you after the half. What was that adjustment?
It wasn't a very dramatic adjustment. We just weren't feeling it well, and then we started feeling it well,
What do you want to see next from this football team after what you learned about it tonight?
Well, we got to get a lot better. I think we've improved. I think we've improved, and we improved this week. But we have to get a lot better, and we can get a lot better. So we need to keep our eye on that.
Excellent game, Coach. Outer Banks season 2 coming now to celebrate?
What's that?
Outer Banks season 2 to celebrate?
I already watched all that. Anything by the water that's got cool-looking trees and boats, I mean, yeah, I'll watch that, just like Bloodline and, you know, any of them of that that type, you know.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, thank you.
I love it. No,
what?
No interview with Mike Leach is boring. You have to say that. So
you can't ask that question to any other coach. You can't.
Yeah, you don't.
They won't answer it.
I'd like to.
You like you're stupid.
I'd like to hear somebody ask Nick Saban about Outer Banks on a post game
sideline
like, interview. He'd be,
what are you talking about? I don't understand what you
mean. Right. It's like,
I don't know what that is.
I don't watch TV. I also love the fact that Mike Leach was like, oh, I already watched that.
He's like, I like anything with by the water with cool trees.
Yeah. and boats. Yeah. It's just
boats.
Classic Mike Leach. So, Jesse,
we weren't feeling it. Then we started feeling it. What?
Yeah. I love the really detailed commentary. I mean, hey. What were your thoughts on this game?
I was wrong, but my dream came true. happy Mike Leach with a nice sound clip and a losing Jimbo, which makes me a very happy person. Life is good. Life is really good. A&M gave up a season high in points as, you know, Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies. They just could not handle or contain the air raid offense. I think you were right. This is the best it's looked. This is the most complete it's looked. I think the team's starting to get in a rhythm. Maybe they're just starting to understand it. I don't know. But things only get tougher for the Aggies next week. And I don't just say that because Alabama's coming to town, but Alabama's coming to town. And, you know, we've all said it multiple times in the show, I think last year and in this year and almost every episode, but Texas A&M is not as good as everybody thinks. And I could maybe hopefully
especially
not
this year.
Those words. Yeah, next week. But
I don't think so.
There were so many.
I don't think
many,
you have anything to worry about.
I hope not. But there were so many outlets that were saying, you know, Texas A&M is coming in. They have natty hopes. They're so good. They're going to be. But if you are a Texas A&M fan and you have hopes still of a natty this season, I would start to rethink that, and I would start to reevaluate and maybe have a come to Jesus with yourself. Because I don't think you're there. Jimbo Fisher could suck it.
I was waiting. I was like, are you going to say it or is that just going to be on the notes? Oh man. Yeah. We watched A&M struggle against Arkansas, which is, you know, whatever. Arkansas has had a great season. You know, obviously they lost to Georgia, but great story. Great season so far. But then they turn around and they lose to Mississippi State at Kyle Field. I mean,
that's huge.
In front of, the crazy fans.
It's home of the 12th man.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the fans were all there and they were going crazy. And it still didn't have the desired effect. I really liked what, and I wish I would have had a chance to look it up for myself, but I was listening to people talk about Will Rogers and his comments after the game. I'm not sure if it was post-game where it was that he said these words, but basically it was obviously he was happy for the victory, but in being a leader, he was basically saying, you know, if you weren't with us when we were losing, you know, don't start following us now that we've done something really good. And I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, like, who's going to have the courage to say that, especially now, especially you know, in the social media days, you can be crucified so quickly. But I think the people are going to respect that. I think the coach and other players on the team will respect that as well. I mean, it shows that that he's a leader and not afraid to stick up for everybody. And we were saying before the show started, I mean, this season for Mississippi State is very close to being completely different. Obviously, they got hosed in the Memphis game. It should have never happened. They should have had that game. But then the LSU game, too, very easily could have bounced their way as they, you know, came back and just fell short there at the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk about those two games. This season could be very different for them. And
I hope so.
I think that Mike Leach is doing good things over there. It's obviously, like everything else that he does, it's different. And you just have to, you just kind of have to.
It's not conventional.
Yeah.
But he did say, and I don't know where he said this. It was probably in not his on-field interview, but I would assume in his press conference. But he pointed out that he's one of the coaches, you know, currently coaching that has probably won more than most in Kyle Field.
As a
Texas A&M coach. He's, I think, 4-for-2 down there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we kind of forget about that. But yeah, he's had plenty of experience there. So he knew what to expect. So that's probably another advantage for them. And I'm certain something that he used during practice during the week. So, all right. So good on Mississippi State there. Moving on to UConn at Vanderbilt. Vandy barely winning this one 30-28. And this was actually a really exciting game. Look, I know it's like two bottom dweller teams.
Bottom dweller.
But it was a very... It was a very interesting game. Vandy snaps their 8-game home losing streak. And then, Jesse, I don't know how you feel about this. Both of Vandy's wins this year have come off the leg of Joseph Bulovas. So,
no, heart unwell. Don't rely on kicking.
You know, I love it for him, though, to have gone through some of the things that he's gone through, and now he's somewhere else. At a very bad team, but winning games, you know, so, or at least a couple of them. So, did you have any thoughts on this slugfest between?
I mean, Vandy, you did it. Barely, but you did it. UConn's really bad.
They are really bad.
Like, they're, and not just bad because they're in a different conference, like, they're bad for their conference.
Right.
They're 0-5. Really bad. It shouldn't get this close, Vandy. We're proud of you, but we want to bring that B up to an A, as my parents used to say.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure there's some people, even up at UConn, who believe that they should probably dismantle their football program as well. I mean, like, it's that bad. But hey, win's a win, I guess.
Right. If this had been women's basketball and you were like, Vandy beat UConn, I would have been like, my God.
Right.
Wow.
Blown away.
Like, they barely edged him out. I would have been amazed. I'd have been so excited for Vandy.
Right.
But Vandy barely beat him in football. And like,
And here's the thing where it's tough to evaluate because, right, Clark Lee comes in and, you know, he said his bar is to just win a game. And that'll be better than last year. But it's not, it's difficult to evaluate because obviously last year was all conference. And this year, his two wins have come against non-conference foes. So, you know, we'll see. I think the expectations are low. So I don't think he's, you know, I don't think people are scrutinizing his coaching just yet. So, but all right. Speaking of scrutiny, two teams that have been under a lot of it recently, Auburn, LSU. Auburn winning this crazy game, 24-19, Jesse getting the point. And this one, this is Auburn's first win at LSU since 1999. So there's a lot of history books being broken out this past weekend. Yeah. Bo Nix doing crazy things. He got the start in this one. TJ Finley did come in. I think that was probably planned. I don't think that was we're going to pull Bo. I think that was kind of designed beforehand just to see what happens. But Bo Nix did pretty well in this game, 255 yards and a touchdown. Lots of crazy Johnny Manziel scrambling plays.
Exactly.
Probably the craziest one of which was a touchdown pass to Tyler Fromm from here in our own backyard. So shout out there. But obviously that scrambling for Bo Nix, a trait that has hurt him. And we've talked about that at length on this show and his scrambling woes as well as successes. Derek Mason on the defensive side, his defense also able to keep LSU's offense largely contained as well, allowing one touchdown and four field goals. So they were able to keep him out of the end zone for the most part. So this was a crazy one to watch. So I had this one on late Saturday. What was it? It was a 9 o'clock
kickoff. It was a 9 o'clock Eastern. Start. Yeah. So 8 for them, but yeah.
So yeah, I think it was, watching this game conclude around 1:30, something crazy like that. So a wild game, crazy finish. Kudos to Auburn for getting it done. But Jesse, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I said it last week. I wanted them both to lose. Auburn won, so that sucks. But LSU lost. That's cool. Right. I can find a positive in it. But
there you go.
Bo Nix proved again that he can oddly come in kind of clutch against really tough opponents, but he somehow finds a way to flounder against lesser ones. Mm-hmm. I don't understand Bo Nix. I really don't.
He's ununderstandable.
He truly is. He is an enigma, that one. Just, you know, pulling out that Johnny Manziel style craziness in Death Valley, a night game in Death Valley, but like can't get it done against Georgia State at home. I don't know. It's weird. Whatever. LSU's season-long struggles of running the ball are just made them really off balance. There's no balance there. It's difficult for them to finish drives in the red zone. And three of York's field goals came on drives that stalled at the Auburn 14, 8, and 5-yard line. You got to get it done in the red zone, guys. You cannot rely solely on field goals. You've got to get the ball moving, and you've got to get something done. Coach O's seat might be a little bit warmer.
I think it's close to burning at this point. Yeah. It's like we said before, there's a lot of people who weren't thrilled about him getting the job to begin with. And those people are probably very loud right now. So, and boy,
Matt Hatter might not have been so bad, guys.
Hey, I think he's got his own problems right now, doesn't he? But,
he's probably not doing so hot.
Yeah. But man, if Kentucky can get it done next week, I don't know that they would get rid of Coach O in the middle of the season, but there's going to be some people who will want
to. They tried to do it the last miles, and then they changed their mind in like the fourth quarter.
Right. So, all right. Well, that does it for last week's games. Current pick-em standings, I've got 19, Jesse with 16, and Matt with 15. So, yeah, you passed Matt. Look at you. So, pretty much everybody pretty close. So, again, lots of points out there still. So, it continues to be close there. So that's pretty cool. All right, let's get to our news segment here. There's a bit of news to talk about.
Here's the news.
All right, so this segment will kind of guide us into the opinion segment. But Mizzou, we talked about defensive coordinator and somebody who's got to be the fall guy. It ended up not being the defensive coordinator. However, Mizzou fires defensive line coach Jethro Franklin after 5 games this season. So interesting thing about Franklin, he's been a D-line coach for a couple decades in both college and pro, including the D-line coach for the Oakland Raiders when Khalil Mack kind of made his introduction on the scene. So I don't know. Like we said earlier, somebody's got to be the fall guy. Is this just a case of Eli making somebody fall on their sword so the masses can be satisfied with their rioting or what? What do you think?
I don't know. Right? Like, it's your defensive line coach, and obviously that's huge, and you have to have a good D-line coach. But it almost feels like to me like Drinky was feeling the heat. He goes to his defensive coordinator and he's like, you better do something. And then he's like, oh no, it might be my job. So he just like goes back in Eli's office and is like, yo, but what if we fire the D-line coach? Like, not me, but like, what if we fire the D-line coach?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that was the right thing to do, but now you're without a coach and of course someone will take over. But if things don't get better, who do you fire next? I don't know. I just don't think that's a really good precedent to start at a program. You're 5 games in and you all of a sudden you fire your D-line coach. Is there something else going on? I don't know.
I mean, that's why I lean more towards Eli hears people, calling for blood and he was like, I got to do something. So let's appease these people and do something. Because like you said, 5 games, how do you even have a chance to evaluate. And of course, I don't see everything that goes on behind the scenes. Sometimes people just aren't a good fit. Sometimes the personalities don't mesh, and you know that, and that's not going to change. And you can get a sense of that. But man, it's so quick. I mean, usually we get to see at least a season to see how somebody's going to pan out.
Yeah. I think more often than not, when people get cut during a season, it's after they've been there for at least one, if not a few seasons. And it's just like, oh no, we can't do this. You know, Lane gets left at the airport. Mm-hmm. Like Mad Hatter, Les Miles almost gets fired in the middle of a game. Like weird stuff like that happens, but you don't really see that happen with like a defensive line coach unless there's some other issue happening, like that's not football related. I don't
Right. Well, clearly their defense has had extreme issues this year. So, but we talked about people calling for change already. That kind of takes us, like I said, into our opinions segment, which I think is kind of interesting. So let's go ahead and get into that.
So if I may venture an opinion.
I'm not really interested in your opinion, 3PO.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah, so talking about coaches and the hot seat, and sometimes that hot seat happens almost as soon as you get there. Some people, we're talking about, you know, coordinators, Auburn, when they lost to Penn State, you got, you know, Brian Harsin in his office. People are wanting to get rid of Derek Mason and Mike Bobo. And these guys are like, I haven't even had a chance to set up my stuff in my office yet. And you want me
I don't even know all the players' names.
Right. You want to get rid of me already? So it seems like we're always talking about this type of thing. Eli Drinkwitz legitimately on the hot seat in his second year. I mean, this is literally his second year, and we're thinking, I don't know if it's going to work out. And so it leads me to think that this is because of two factors, because you didn't used to see this kind of thing. Obviously the first one we've talked about on this show, the Saban effect, which I'm sure you're proud of. And, and number two, the 24-hour sports news cycles. We got to have something to talk about, right? So it's kind of like, it's kind of funny. It's like, as soon as like, you know, obviously a team wins and we're like, oh man, what great play calling. That was amazing. But then like a team loses like a game and we're like, I don't know. They might need to rethink their head coach. And we're like, whoa, wait, what? This is kind of, you know, pump the brakes here a little bit. I think people have to have something to nitpick, especially when we have these things where we got to fill every hour slot with something. And I know we talk about it too, you know, so we're not, you know, immune to it, but what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think first of all, when the dreadful day comes, when Saban retires, God, our fan base is going to be the worst for whoever decides to accept that job. Cause God bless him. It's not going to be great. It's going to be so bad. because Saban came in 2 years, won a natty. Like, that's not going to happen yet.
Bear Bryant himself could be, he could be reincarnated. And obviously nobody know, but he could go in and be like, hey guys, I used to be Bear Bryant. And they'd be like, I don't care. You're not Nick Saban. Get out of here.
Right. So. Right. It's going to be insane. I'm not looking forward to that day. But you're right. The thing with Eli Drinkwitz that I think that is maybe pushing this a little more than you would see with a coach that's in his second year is Mizzou was not doing great, right? Like they had, they have sanctions against them. I can't remember now.
They did. I think it was at the beginning of last year that was announced, or maybe it was the year before that. I can't
year
remember.
Year before, maybe.
I don't remember, you know, how long that was supposed to last. Yeah.
Yeah. Interim coach who have sanctions and all that. And they weren't great. I don't feel like they were this bad.
Right.
And
it's a pretty big drop off. Pretty fast.
It is a huge drop off. And last year it was like, okay, they were all right. But then you come into this and it's just like, all right, you have the talent there. Some of it's not the talent that you recruited. A lot of it's not, but it's still talent and it's going down. Mm-hmm. And so you're not developing talent and you're not fostering talent. And so with that, there will come transfers. Right. Just undoubtedly, there will be transfers. An unhappy fan base. and it makes recruiting hard. And so as a, you know, as an athletic director, you have to take that into account as like, listen, we have the talent or some talent, and now it's going downhill. So it's gotta be a coaching thing. You know, I think people, and, you know, not to pick on Tennessee, but they've done this, you know, where they don't give coaches a chance. They just start firing. But I think even Tennessee, you start to see in your players a little bit of development. And then once it drops off, then that's when they cut them. But, you know, you at least start to see some development. Whereas with Drinkwitz, I don't think we've seen development.
Do you think it could also be because everything is so much more transparent nowadays too? Like back in the old days, whatever that means, but you know what I mean? It was more of like a black box type of thing. Like there's this process that's going on, but nobody really sees it. I mean, you got a few media members who might have access who can see it, but you didn't have all these, you can post live feeds and you can post this, you can talk to people and you can get all these insights that you wouldn't have normally been able to get back in the day. And do you think it could be that?
I think it's that. I also think it's, you know, kids just having the transfer options. I don't remember years ago there being that many transfers. You might have one or two decent players that transfer. I feel like we see it a lot more now. Kids are just like, can't have my spot here. Fine, I'll go somewhere else.
Right.
Or it's not, you're not working out for me here. I'll go somewhere else. And schools have to be really careful of that. And I think that feeds into their coaching decisions too, because if a coach isn't working out, isn't developing players, isn't winning ball games, then they need to make a decision, because they're going to lose players and they're going to lose good recruits. And that's what it all comes down to.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I get it. They're getting paid a lot of money, so they're going to be under a microscope. It makes sense, but it's wild how volatile it is.
Oh, it's not a job I would want. You just don't unpack your stuff.
And how public your life, your family's life, everybody is affected. I mean, you have no privacy. And can you imagine, you know, I can't really wrap my mind around it, but just thinking about somebody in my family or whatever, who is literally just destroyed by media members, by fans on a daily basis. And you just kind of have to sit there and take it, because what is saying something going to do, right? You're not going to change anybody's mind.
It fuels the
fire. It's going to say, if anything, it makes it worse. So,
I think, you know, you can't really do anything. I mean, we joked about Urban Meyer, not that he needs to be doing that. He certainly does not need to be doing that. But anybody else who has a dad or whatever that's weird, you don't really see it, right? Like, you're not going to necessarily know about it, but like, he has daughters.
Right.
You know, close to my age. And all of a sudden, you know, they can't get on Instagram or, you know, look at a news because their creepy drunk dad's on there trying to get with co-ed. Like, ooh.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
Terrible.
It is a wild kind of thing to think about. But at the same time, like I said, I guess you're getting paid a lot. There's a lot of expectation, and that includes behavior.
You know what you're getting into. I mean, I think a lot of the older coaches, right? Like, this is definitely not the realm that they entered into when they first started. It certainly is now. But if you're a newer coach, you know what is about to be demanded of you, your family, whoever. It's not a joke. And you know that you are hanging on by a thread.
Yeah. It's all part of it. So, yeah, it's interesting to see how things have changed. But, all right, let's talk about this week's matchups and talk about what our picks are going to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
All right, so our first matchup of the day, number 13, Arkansas, 4-1 at number 17, Ole Miss at 3-1. That is a noon kickoff on ESPN. You know, we're going to find out which of these teams is going to be able to get over that loss, right? So we had some expectations going into last week. Maybe we can hang with the big dogs, and both teams, you know, didn't really do that. So
Nope.
Who's going to be able to recover? I think the Ole Miss kind of matches up a little bit better in this one.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be close. I got Ole Miss winning this one 35-31. Jesse, what you got?
I just put my pick in because I've been going back and forth on only this one all day. Like I would put one down and then I would convince myself of the other one and then I would go back and forth. Yeah. I could have very, very easily put down with a different score, but after last week, I think maybe Ole Miss can do it, and I think they're pissed off, maybe more so than Arkansas. I think Lane's embarrassed, and so I'm picking Ole Miss 41-31.
All right, and then Matt has his pick in. He's got Ole Miss winning 42-21, so a little bit more confident in Ole Miss. So, all right, next we have Vanderbilt at 2-3 at number 20, Florida 3-2, noon on SEC Network. Poor Vandy. You know, Florida's ticked off. They're just wanting blood on this one. I got Florida winning this one 48-10. Jesse?
It's not going to be a good Saturday for Vandy. Vandy fans, it's fine. Find something else to do. UF has got this one 32-6.
All right, and Matt has Florida 45-10. So next we have South Carolina at 3-2 at Tennessee, also 3-2, noon on ESPN2. South Carolina, we've talked about it. They've been pulling the struggle win, as Matt quotes Funny Maine. Tennessee's coming off a big win. They're pretty confident after that. I think Tennessee's going to get this done. I got them winning 31-21. Jesse?
Yeah, I don't think the Gamecocks are going to travel well. I'm picking the Vols 34-17.
Probably a good pick. And Matt has Tennessee winning 45-27. So there you go.
Okay.
Next, we have number 2, Georgia at 5-0 at number 18, Auburn 4-1. This is that 3:30 slot on CBS, their SEC game of the week. I think that Georgia's defense is going to be able to fluster Bo Nix. We've seen that he likes to take off. He almost looks to take off running before he even looks to pass. I think he takes the snap expecting to run, and then throwing is like an afterthought. That's just sort of what it kind of seems like from watching him over the years. But hey, who knows? We're in Jordan-Hare where crazy things happen. So heck if I know. If Auburn's defense can stop Georgia and that rushing attack, we could see a close one. I'm going to lean more towards the experts, which are thinking Georgia by a couple. I got Georgia winning this one 31-14. Jesse, what you got?
Yeah, I agree. I think Georgia gets it done. I picked the Dogs 31-17, but beware of the Jordan-Hare juju.
You just never know with that stuff. So, Matt has Georgia winning this one 35-21. All right. North Texas at 1-3 at Mizzou, 2-3, 4:00 on SEC Network. Now look, we've talked a lot about Mizzou, their struggles, Eli Drinkwitz, his hot seat, or him being on the hot seat. I feel like this is the measuring stick here to a certain extent. You've already had a bad look complaining about going to Boston College and then losing to Boston College, getting blown out by Tennessee. You know, the reason I say this is the measuring stick is because I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, Chad Morris at Arkansas lost to North Texas. And that was kind of, I think that was one of the catalysts to make people think, I don't think this is going to work out. And if you recall, he was out pretty quickly. So I think this will be a little bit of an evaluation, for old Eli, or Coach Drinky, as Matt would say. But I've got Mizzou winning this one 44-24, but in the back of my mind, I don't know. We'll see. Jesse, what do you got?
I have to agree. This could be a trap game. And Mizzou fans, if they lose this, woof. Coach Drinkwitz, if you lose this, I would go immediately home and pack a suitcase.
Don't even bother to circle the wagons. So
don't circle the wagons. There is, it's going to be a tough Tuesday. It's not going to be great. I'm going to pick Mizzou 31-17, but I could have easily picked North Texas and been fine with that pick.
Yeah. All right. Matt has Mizzou 28-21. So also a fairly close one there. So, all right. Next we have LSU at 3-2 at number 16, Kentucky 5-0 on SEC Network at 7:30. Like I said, I hope Lexington saved a few things to burn because it's going to be a crazy night. I believe that they are going to get it done against LSU. I have Kentucky winning this one 28-24. Jesse, what do you have?
Kroger Field, you better pack yourselves with fans again. I think it's going to be a fun one. I hope it's not down to the wire like the last one because that is just too much to handle. But I think LSU's bad, man. I think LSU's bad. Mm-hmm. I think Kentucky gets it done again with the help of their fans in Kroger Field. I'm picking the Wildcats 24-17.
Yeah, and then Matt, he's going with LSU, but not by much. He's got LSU 21-20. So I think it's going to be another wild one. We really enjoyed watching that game against Florida. I think this is going to be another crazy one. So I'm looking forward to it. So
yeah, it's a good one.
All right. So you talked about, A&M when CBS, CBS does, I think it's one or two primetime games a year.
Yeah.
And, they try to pick, the biggest, matchup of the year. And they may be regretting that right now. Number one, Alabama 5-0 at Texas A&M 3-2, and unranked, 8 o'clock on CBS. So, CBS executives may be kicking themselves right now, but hey,
none of us could have predicted all of this. None of us would have thought that Arkansas UGA would have been a highly anticipated game.
Right.
Luckily it ended up being a total noon game, but we didn't know.
I think this is going to be, I don't know if it's going to be quite the blowout that we saw with, Bama, Notre Dame, where they're, talking about, the quarterback's girlfriends after halftime, but,
that would have been so fun.
I do think that this one is going to be, handled well by Alabama. And, I don't think you have any cause for concern. I'm going to go with the same score as last week against Ole Miss. I'm going with Bama 42-21. Jesse.
I really hope we annihilate them in Kyle Field. I will be so hard to deal with next week. Don't worry. I will write down my Jimbo jokes. I'm
just go ahead and get them lined up.
I'm so excited. I'm picking Bama 42-24.
All right. Matt has Bama 45-28. So all of us kind of in the same neighborhood there. So, all right. That does it for the games for this upcoming weekend. Now let's talk about our Just for Fun. And I am really excited about this. So obviously, coaches can be highly sought after for marketing opportunities and commercials and being a spokesperson for different products. But this week, it's up to us to decide what that product or company is going to be. So, Jesse, let's start with you and the coaches that have been randomly assigned to you. Who do you have and who are they going to represent?
First, I have Coach Kirby Smart.
Okay.
Sport Clips.
Sport Clips.
I feel like that's where he gets his haircut. That's what it looks like. And I just,
that's being generous. I was thinking more of like a self clip.
But if you've seen their commercials lately, it's all like on the football field and like pretending to do practice. I just feel like they put Kirby Smart to yell.
Yeah.
I don't know. He just looks like a sport clip, guys.
I get it. That's fair.
Next, Coach Mike Leach. And I thought about this one for a long time. And I finally decided that there was really no commercial or product that would give him enough time to talk. Because those are very expensive. They're very expensive.
They are.
So I thought he would be best placed as a guest host on QVC, because all they do is market products. All they do is sell you things, and they just stand there and talk. And I think that's what he's best at, is just talking. And so I think he's just randomly a guest on QVC.
You know, if that was true, my TV would be over there a lot. If he
I'd
was
watch
on there.
QVC. Absolutely. I'd end up buying whatever Mike Leach was selling.
Right. I don't even know what that is, but it was funny the way he described it. So I want one. So
trying to describe a new, like, I don't know, blender or skincare routine. I don't know, but I think he would do well there. So might be a little retirement gig for him. Next I had Jimbo Fisher. Thought about this one for a long time.
Yeah.
A very long time. And I just kept coming back to Jimmy Dean sausage. And I don't know why.
Is it just like you could just picture him with the package, like, ate Jimmy Dean?
Yeah, basically. Just like, I don't know.
That's all the ad is. It's just him. Ate it. Ate Jimmy Dean.
See him as a guy who eats a lot of Jimmy Dean sausage.
I see him at the fridge. Hey, honey, we're almost out of the Jimmy Dean. Can you take care of that?
So. Yeah, he might get fancy and he might get the like little breakfast sammies. I don't know.
Right.
But
not the two packs, but like the bigger ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, there's no rhyme or reason for
if
that.
If he's
one,
really adventurous, he's going to get the pancake and sausage on a stick. You seen those?
Ooh, I have. Those are fancy. That's for wins. That's for when they win.
That's reserved for the wins. Yeah.
Next, I had Josh Heupel from Tennessee. This one took me a minute because he's new,
right,
and I don't have a good sense of him.
Right.
So I Googled pictures of him to try to get more of a sense for his vibe. Mm-hmm. And I just kept seeing pictures of him in that god-awful orange. And all I could think of was the Kraft dinosaur. So he's Kraft mac and cheese.
Kraft mac and cheese. Positive is if he's eating it and spills it, NBD. So
he doesn't even need a tie to go. He's got it. So that's what I thought of for him. He kind of does look like the dinosaur a little bit. So it worked. And then I had Clark Lee, and again, new. So I had to Google him, and he is fading up here.
I mean, it's like gone, right?
it's gone. I was trying to be nice, but it's gone. And so as someone who lived in Chicago for 4 years, if we have any listeners up there, you will understand that I think he should be the Southern restore hair guy. Brian Urlacher is up there in the Chicagoland. I think the Knoxville area needs Clark Lee as their restore hair guy.
I like that. That's a good one. You know what else came into my mind when I just visualized him was Mr. Clean. So.
Oh, yeah. So, good going too. I knew that.
All right. I like those. Obviously, Matt is not here, so we're going to kind of just blurt out what comes to our mind with the ones that were randomly assigned to him. So first off is, Lane Kiffin. What are your, do you have any thoughts on that? I'm sure you do.
Tinder.
Yeah.
He just a Tinder or Bumble or some dating app. I was going to say maybe like Adam and Eve, who knows, but that's all I can think of.
I was going to say those or OnlyFans or
Hooters.
Yeah. 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 Something like that. And it, obviously it's, you know.
Oh my God. You know, it'd be so funny.
I have all these subscriptions. You should do it too.
If he was like a Orville Redenbacher popcorn guy.
Yeah. That would be awesome. Yeah. There's so many possibilities, really.
He's a rich target.
Right. Highly sought after. So, all right. Dan Mullen. Oh, man. I don't know. I don't have a vibe right off the bat for
Drano.
Okay. Is that just, is there a reason or just kind of?
There is. It's because he obviously, or Jell-O. He reminds me of Cousin Eddie. And so when Cousin Eddie says, I mean, you can bleep it out, but shitter's full, I think they need Drano. And so I think of Drano, and he could just dress in that and be like,
Yeah.
and he eats the green Jell-O with the cat food on it. So maybe Jell-O.
Yeah. Yep. What was he say? That's lime.
That's a lime.
I love that. Okay. Yeah, we'll go with those. I can't think of anything else. Sam Pittman. Definitely got to be like Kingsford.
Sweet Baby Ray's.
Yeah, something like that. Something along those lines. Yeah, that
he starts doing the like Got Milk ads. I don't know why.
You mean like with the mustache?
Yeah.
That is something I don't want to see, but just kind of.
I see it.
Okay. Oh, this one might be a little difficult. Brian Harsin.
Hard.
I don't know. So I don't know that much about him. However, I have heard stories, and maybe this will help us out, that everything in his life, whether it be like his office or his house or whatever, is like perfectly in order. Like every pin is like lined up in its place.
That sounds like OCD.
Very, very meticulous kind of dude. So I don't know. Did that bring up any?
I need to visualize
him.
He looks very angry.
Yeah.
He has a very angry face.
Angry face. Sir, you have an angry face.
He has a very angry face. Brian Dale Harsin has a very angry face.
Dale.
Yeah, Dale. I don't know why, and this happened before I looked up his picture, and now it's just staying with me. I think he is doing commercials for Kohl's.
Kohl's? Okay. I can see that.
I don't know why.
Also, in the organization theme, I think he would do like you know, those little organizers that you can buy, whether it be for folders or whether it be the bins, the little
IKEA commercial.
Yeah, there you go, IKEA. There we go. He's an IKEA
Brian
guy.
I can see that.
IKEA spokesman. All right. Well, the ones that I had were Shane Beamer, and I think this one is self-explanatory. BMW. For obvious reasons. Ed O. I don't know that this is necessarily a product would be good for him. Kind of like you were talking about Mike Leach, just a single ad is not enough for him. I think he needs to be like the guy who's in charge of reading, like, you know, the fine print, you know, when they have to get through the fine print in like 5 seconds at the end of an ad. Cause you already can't understand it anyway. Right. It's just some guy going like that. And so I think we all want to hear Coach O do that, because that would just be entertaining to no end. It'd just be a lot of grunting and things like that. So, and he gets paid to do that, right? You're like, oh man, you're the voice of those commercials. I don't know what you said, but it sounded cool.
I liked it.
Right. And then we have Nick Saban, Little Debbie. Like, guys, how is this not a thing? So I looked this up. I was like, you
they
know what?
Probably approached him. He's probably like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, which is funny, because like obviously he loves it, because he eats them every morning. But he does Aflac commercials. You'd think that Little Debbie could get him. But anyway, the only thing I could find was there was an ESPN commercial where a bunch of the College Game Day guys are in his office. I don't know if you remember that one, where he's at his desk. He pulls out the. Is a cream pie or moon pie? It's cream pie, isn't it?
It's a cream pie. Cream pie.
Cream pie. Oatmeal cream pie. And he opens the package, and one falls out on the ground, and he picks it up like really fast, and he eats it awkwardly, like nobody saw that. You remember that ad?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. You gotta go look it up. It's really funny. It's a young Nick Saban, like 10 years ago.
It's true though. Like, I mean, Tuscaloosa is not like a huge place, and he obviously, I don't know if he still does, but. When I was there, he drove a Ford pickup, because I think they all do. They probably get them for free because they do the ads. But I can't remember who it was, but I did have a friend that was driving down the street and pulled up next to Coach Saban at a stoplight, and he was no doubt eating an oatmeal cream pie, Little Debbie oatmeal cream pie, and had a Coca-Cola in the console. So it is real.
Nice. That's hilarious. Hey, so he's the same person on TV. And
he really is.
All right. So that needs to be a thing. So Little Debbie, if you're listening to this, make it happen, because it just makes sense. All right. So Mark Stoops, he's doing commercials for the local Joe's Auto Repair Shop, because that's just the kind of guy he is. And he'd be a great spokesperson for that.
He's Duke Mayo might snag him. I could see that. They clearly had a ton of money to put into sponsorship.
They did.
So they might be able to snag him.
Yeah, yeah. So, that would be hilarious, actually. All right, and then finally we have Coach Eli Drinkwitz. He's the spokesperson for the latest beginner online beginner workout videos for YouTube. But he's actually leading the sessions, right? But it's not like these crazy intense, like, you know, workouts, but it's the ones where you're doing beginner workouts, you're trying to get people involved, and he's like rapid fire cliches at the people while they're doing it. You know, he's like, you could do it, you know, circle the wagons, guys, you got to believe. It ain't about what you don't have, it's about what you do have.
And oh my He's going to be in a Beachbody commercial. You know, the like Beachbody workout program that everybody tries to sell you on.
Right.
And they have commercials now where it's like, I didn't say this was going to be easy. I said it was going to be worth it. Oh my God. It's him.
It is. Oh my gosh. I need to, so, you know, whatever happens, I need to grab some more clips because I need to amass more of those. So of course they haven't been winning lately, but, when they do win, I'm going to have to grab a clip to see if we get another cliche out of them. So
you might be waiting a while.
Can add that to the montage. Yeah, that's true too. But anyway, yes. So that was our Just for Fun segment. That was a blast. So good answers. Appreciate that. Appreciate you guys listening to us. We'll go ahead and get you guys out of here. I do want to mention, I forgot to mention this at the beginning, that we are on Spotify now. So check us out there if you haven't already. If you'd like to hit us up on email, do so at pigskinsandpageantry@gmail.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/pigskinsandpageantry. We are on Twitter at PPSEC Podcast. We're also on Instagram at pigskinsandpageantry. Don't forget we are available for download on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcasting apps for iPhone, Android, and other operating systems. Again, we are on the Blue Wire Hustle program. Excited about that. We've made the move over. I'm trying to make sure all the feeds are redirected. So wherever you caught us before, hopefully you're able to catch us here now. So if you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe and review. We'd love a 5-star review to increase our visibility. Tell everybody how awesome you think we are. We appreciate that. So, hey, another week. Another exciting bout of games. The game's coming up that I'm really looking forward to. This is Wes. Until next time, go Dogs.
Let's make Jimbo Fisher hate his life. I can't wait to storm into Kyle Field. Roll Tide.
Gosh, Jesse with the curb stomp. Gosh, no mercy. So.